All right. Welcome, everybody. Come on in. It's an exciting night. We have loads of people joining us. Gardening is a hot topic. Comment in the chat box if you can. We would love to know where you're tuning in from. Welcome. This is the RCR Gardening webinar. We've got the amazing Wally Richards joining us tonight. For those of you who might already know him, you probably listened to tons of interviews. And for those of you that don't know him, Wally Richards is a professor of gardening guru. He's an expert, the go-to RCR gardener. We're going to pop his website later on in the chat. And we've got Rodney Hyde, who many of you know. Lovely, empathetic, sympathetic interviewer on a range of topics, very emotive topics, as well as topics that are very handy, like gardening. So welcome. We've got people coming in from Pami North, Paraparaumu, from Uranui, Bulls, all over the place. Fairly, Richmond, Nelson. Keep them coming. We'd love to know where you're all tuning in from. We'll give people a minute, pretty much, and then we're just going to dive straight in. Whangarei, Wellington, Hamilton, Fielding, Gore, Chucha, Tawa. Amazing. Rongatea, Napier. Botany, Whitby. We will have the chat going as we discuss things tonight. I'm going to do my best. I'm pretty much going to hand over. If you don't know me, Natalie Cutler-Welsh from the Up Your Brave show. You might have heard me on the Daily Brief, which lands every weekday at 12 o'clock. And we do a little overview. We do the news and we do a political overview. And I talk about what's coming up on RCR. Whakatane. Yay, somebody just ordered your book, Wally. Great. West Auckland, Auckland, Northland. All right, we're all here. Everyone's coming in. I'm just going to keep things moving, but pretty much, Rodney, I'm going to hand the mic to you because Wally is your man. You guys have done, I don't know how many interviews. You can let us know how many times Wally's been on the show. This is a power hour for people to glean some gold about gardening from Wally. Over to you, Rodney.
Oh, thank you, Nat. So good to have your introduction. Wally, it's been a while before, since drinks, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been. A lot of people have missed us, Rod, and
I
particularly you,
know.
Rodney.
I know. How have you been?
Pretty good. Gardening's going all right. We've had a little bit of rain and so forth, but it's not faring so well for everybody throughout the country because some places are very dry and some places got too much water. So it's not a great season, but we're getting there.
Would the gardeners, would you say, oh, this is a typical summer, or is every summer different?
Well, in actual fact, it's not a typical summer, and it depends on how far back you look. I can relate to times when summer was blue skies, white fluffy clouds, and really lots of sunshine, nice heat. This season, or this particular time, we've been up and down the temperatures a bit, particularly in the beginning. It's evened out now, and people's cucumbers and pumpkins and so forth like that, and they're growing better. It's a little bit not so good, really, overall.
And you think this is something that's changed in the sky, right?
Well, the problem is plants are not getting as much light as they used to. I've noticed that the sky, instead of being a lovely, brilliant blue like we used to have, is now more of a murky blue. So light is not getting to the plants as well as it used to. And they're having slower growth. Light is most important for plants because that's where they photosynthesize and make the carbohydrates, which is their energy to grow. And if they're not doing that, they're not growing very well. In fact, a lot of gardeners have told me in recent times, why do plants not grow like they used to grow? And it's to do with the light, and it's also to do with reduced CO2 levels because plants need a good amount of CO2. In fact, if they get lots of CO2, they really grow like you wouldn't believe. And
Well,
hence,
commentators are agreeing with you, Wally. So we've had the summer, we're heading into the winter. Winter gardening. What does winter gardening mean?
Well, the thing with winter gardening is it's the daylight hours once again and the amount of sunshine. And we are now in a situation where the daylight hours is slowly decreasing by 2 or 3 minutes a day. So that's a little bit less time for the plants to actually have light. That means if you're going to have plants, whether they be vegetables or flowers for the winter, you've got to get them in as quickly as possible. In fact, there's a lot of urgency to get the plants in as soon as possible so they can take maximum use of what daylight hours there still is. Once the daylight hours disappear, down to like in the middle of winter, when plants just sit there and sulk, they're only getting about 8 hours of very low light levels in the middle of winter, and so they don't grow particularly well at all. If you get your plants in too late, and I mean, like, say we start planting in April or May, those plants will grow a little bit and then they'll sit there and sulk during the low daylight hours. And then when the daylight hours start to expand again, they will just go to seed because they've had a check in their growth. And so now is the time to get your seedlings in, far better than having planting seeds, because you've got the advantage of seedlings. But that creates a little bit of a problem too, because at the moment we've got lots of pests around, white butterflies and all sorts of insects. But I came across a very unique thing recently. You know, the great big containers of water. In fact, I've got one here. These great big how's your father's, yes. Right? Okay. My family loved the water out of these, which is very nice. But we've got piles of them because they go through about one of these every week or so. So I had a brilliant idea recently whereby you cut the bottom off.
And you have glass house.
Right, at the there. Now, you plant your cabbage in the ground and you pop that over the top. Perfect. It's got its own little glass house, costs you nothing. All you had to do was cut the base off. You take the cap off the top. You can water your hose straight down into the top there. The plant's protected against all sorts of pests and birds and cats or whatever, and it will grow quite happily inside that, faster than they would do outside.
Do they have a problem if they don't get fresh air in there?
If they don't get, sorry?
Fresh air. Do they need a bit of fresh air?
No. They've got plenty of air. Because we've got the cap off.
Keep the cap off, okay.
It won't mist up too much. And if it does, that water will go back down. No, they're quite happy. It's like having their own little private glass house.
Some people say in the chat they do it with cordial bottles and drink bottles. That would be a possibility too, those 3 litre ones or 2.5 litre ones or whatever they are. That would work for a smaller plant.
Yeah, no, that'd be good. The advantage of this, you could grow a mini cabbage or mini cauliflower the whole of its life inside there because they're not that big.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's really good to go. I found in one of those shops where you have, you know, various things selling, that they had these here. Now, to start a plant off, it's ideal because in a closed atmosphere like that, it's a microclimate. And a microclimate means they're getting the best of everything, getting warmth, heat, and so forth, moisture, and they just grow.
What should you be planting in your winter garden, Wally? First question. And second question, obviously it'll vary up and down the country. Down here in Queenstown, are we a bit late?
Yeah, it can be, but once again, I've got some nice ways of pushing the plants along and making them grow bigger, faster, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But at the moment, basically any hardy vegetables can be planted. You can't plant the likes of cucumbers and things like that, But cabbages, your brassicas, your cauliflower, silver beet, ideal, spinach, carrots, which you grow from seed, and they'll still germinate nicely and grow into the winter. So basically anything that's reasonably hardy, you can plant now. And ideally as young seedlings you buy in the garden centre or whatever.
Could you plant peas, Wally?
Yeah, particularly snow peas. Mm-hmm. They are the flat ones. They're ideal for winter. And peas themselves, you can grow them through the winter as well. One precaution, though, if you're buying seedlings in, one of the things that happens is quite often the seedlings, particularly cabbages and so forth, will already have little eggs on them from white butterflies, because the white butterflies have come into the nursery and found these little plants, laid the eggs. Also, another problem arises too, and because of summertime, things dry out so quickly, quite often little seedlings have got stressed while they've been in their punnets or in their little cell packs. And when you go shopping for veggies, look for the small, fresh, young ones. Don't take any notice of the big old gargled ones, because they more than likely have been stressed at some point of time through lack of water, whatever. And if you take them home and plant them, they'll grow for a little bit and then just go to seed and you waste time. If the seedlings that you buy are small, you can always grow them on at home and get them a bit bigger before you plant them out. And then, of course, you can plant them in one of these containers. Ideal.
Mm. Mm. Too late for kumara?
Oh, yes. Kumara will be coming up for harvest time in another month or so. They are about a 9-month crop.
Have you heard, someone's asked me, I've never heard of these, what are tiger slugs, Wally, and what do you do about them?
Tiger slugs?
Yeah. Grey with stripes and spots about 7 centimetres long.
Oh, the big long ones, the native ones.
Yeah.
They love carpets. They come inside and eat your carpet. Did you know that?
No, never heard of them.
Yeah.
Never seen them.
Yeah, I have. I've come across them. I've not noticed that they do any damage in the garden in regards to eating plants or anything like the normal little slugs, but they probably eat the organic material. And I do know they like carpet. They're carpet slug.
Wow, carpet slug. Oh, my goodness. You said that there are things that you can do to compensate for the shortening days to give your plants a boost. What are they, Wally?
Yeah. Now, some time ago, I worked out, because of the dimming skies, that the plants are not getting enough carbohydrates to grow, right? So how about we take some molasses, and my formula is very simple. You take a tablespoon of molasses to a litre of hot water, so it dissolves very nicely, give it a stir, and then you add some of the magic botanic liquid to it, 10 mils of that. And another one, which I haven't mentioned before, microcin, which is also very beneficial to increasing the microbial activity on the plant and in the soil. And then you go out and you spray your plants with that on a regular basis. Now, you could do it every day if you want to, but gardeners have reported back to me using that formula and doing it 2 or 3 times a week, the plants are jumping out the ground. They are growing so quickly and so beautifully because they're getting all this free carbohydrates and they're getting all the benefits of the magic botanic liquid and the microcin. And the gardens are looking so, so good and growing so quickly. So this will help compensate for the shorter daylight hours. So if you get your little seedlings now and you make up that brew, and the brew keeps quite nicely in a sprayer, so if you don't use it all up in one go, all you've got to do is put it in the shed, uncap the sprayer, so any microbes that are inside the mix, when they populate, they're not going to balloon the container. So you let it breathe. And then next time you go to use it, put the cap back on, go out, spray, and it makes a world of difference.
How do you spell mycosin, Wally?
Mycosin is mycorrcin. Mycosin.
That was a test to see if you're onto it. I have to say, I didn't believe you about Magic Botanic Liquid, but I put it on my plants. Oh, my goodness. And this summer, I added in the molasses and I put it on my beech trees and they just shot ahead. And I've been too lazy and haven't done it since. And I have to do it because it made such a difference. You could literally see them growing those few days.
Yeah, no, it's totally magic. On your strawberries, like now we're coming to the end of the strawberry time, you can increase your strawberries by using that. They'll produce more flowers, more berries. The berries will be bigger and they'll sweeter. It's a kick along for all your plants.
People are asking for the recipe. We'll put it on, hopefully, on the webpage, but also you can go to Wally's webpage, which is gardennews.nz. Is it, Wally, with one N?
Yeah, but that's not on that website. But ideally, if people email me, and finding my email address is quite easy. You go into Google and put Wally Richards, and I come up, I think, on the first half dozen pages just about.
Yeah.
And send me an email, and I'll put you on my weekly gardening email list. And on there, you can request other information, or they can phone me if they need the recipe. 0800 466 464, same as the mail order website.
0800 466 464. I got to tell you this, the number of people that I meet wandering around the countryside and they say, oh, I rang Wally, he was amazing. Because we're not used to rigging a business and actually getting someone who can talk sense.
Yeah, well, see, a funny thing, like the mail order website, people cannot pay on the website. And they ring me up and they complain, I can't, I got the order. I'll put the order in, but where do you pay? And I said, well, here's a little secret. I like to talk to my customers. Oh, do you? Yeah, because sometimes what happens is quite funny. People will order a particular product, right? And I'll say to them, okay, now what are you going to use that for? And they tell me, and I say, well, you got the wrong product. And I say, well, what should we have? And then I can tell them the correct thing for their particular problem. It's like sometimes with some places you go to a garden centre or like big chain and so forth, and somebody says, oh, here's what you need. And you take it home and it doesn't work because it's the wrong thing. So getting the right thing, then you get the results that you want from your garden.
Someone's asking about how to spell mycosin again. You can find it on Wally's webpage. Again, you can Google it and you'll find it on his webpage, but it's
mycorrcin. You could say mycosin, or you'd say mycorrhizin. It depends whether you say vase or vase.
Someone's Nat spelled it perfectly.
Maybe I might have got it right. But I wanted to commend you, Wally, because I think everyone appreciates it. There's lots of love coming in on the chat. And just that old school business, like actually ringing someone and actually getting someone who's in the same country and knows his stuff. Like, it's just a beautiful thing. And we love it. And you're so wise. People are saying you're such a legend, dishing out all these tips. So, yeah, love that. Okay. Can we also get his website popped into the chat at some point by somebody? Thank you.
I had a listener come up to me and she said, I rang Wally in here and I ended up talking for an hour.
You know what it's like, Rodney. You know, us older people, we get natting and we just don't know when to stop.
I know, you get these young ladies ringing you up with their gardening tips and you're great. No, you're fantastic to me whenever I ring you too, Wally. What else can we do? We've got in a way, would it be fair to say that by adjusting the microclimate and by feeding our plants MBL, molasses, mycosin, we can overcome the early days of winter, but also we can overcome being in the southern latitudes, like down here in Otago.
Yeah, it does, because one of the interesting things that happens too is that the leaves of the plants, when you're spraying them with mycrosin, etc., and the molasses, they get bigger and bigger, which means it's like having a bigger solar panel. If you have a bigger solar panel, you're going to get more energy. So the plants, I found one season, this is 2 years ago, I was amazed. Normally, in the beginning of the season, going into summer, the first thing you get to eat is a tomato, right? But that particular year, the first thing we had ready to eat was a cucumber. And that was never happened before. Usually cucumbers are about a month behind the tomatoes, ready to use. And the reason was because the cucumbers got a bigger leaf, and so it was getting more energy from the sun, and the smaller leaf on the tomato plants wasn't getting as much. So it beat it. That's because, once again, this uneven amount of sunlight. So to overcome it, once again, the molasses and the mycrosin and the magic botanic liquid, it's a winner. It just boosts everything along nicely.
I went along, what are they called? What's that big farming co-op that you use, that there's a farming co-op? And I bought like 5 kgs of molasses, a big tub of molasses, and it's not expensive.
No.
For how little you use. But
about $69 for 20 litres.
That's
25 litres.
20 kgs. It's
and
huge.
Here's another point too.
Yeah.
As a kid, did your mum give you molasses?
Yes. Farmlands, that's it.
Right. Because it's energy, it's got a whole lot of health aspects to it.
Mm.
And if times got really tough and you've got a couple of tubs of molasses here, you can live off them.
We used to be given blackstrap molasses.
That's
when
right.
We were feeling ill or run down. And out would come the blackstrap molasses, and you'd have it, and your little green leaves would bushy up just like my trees. I have to say, Wally, I haven't been in the garden. I spent the day, a good part of the day, gardening. Oh my goodness. I just didn't feel myself this morning. You spend some time in your garden, there's something wonderful about it. I just felt happy in my garden. And it's possibly biblical even, like we've been gardeners forever.
Do you know why?
Plants talk to us.
There's an interaction between you and your plants. Your plants actually create a niceness sort of thing. Like if you go home stressed from a day at work, etc., and you get out in the garden, maybe hand watering with a wand and so forth, the stress just disappears. You're with nature, and it kind of somehow or other changes your well-being and changes your mood. And it's brilliant.
My neighbour gave me some of her tomatoes today. They were to die for. And we had some supermarket tomatoes as well. No taste.
No
you
taste.
Can't beat the taste of homegrown food, can you?
And vine ripened.
Oh.
Ripening on the plant. Because, see, for instance, this is something I learned a long time ago, particularly in the off-season, where they bring tomatoes, say, from Australia into New Zealand. They're picked green, right? And while they're in transport coming to New Zealand, apparently they gas them, which changes them to red. They don't ripen. They're just green tomatoes that look red.
You're joking me.
No, that's what I heard. And as far as I know, it's a fact. But tree ripened with the fruit or anything, because all your fruit, should I say, in the supermarket have been picked unripe, because they keep longer and they ripen slowly off the tree. But they don't have that sugars and the taste that they would do if you picked off your tree when it's ripe yourself.
Have you ever pumped CO2 into a glasshouse, Wally?
Yes, but not so much pumped it. All you've got to do is burn a little flame in there, CNC or whatever, gas, what's the name, butane. They will generate, it's like, you know the story about you've got a caravan and so you don't have the gas fire going and you go to sleep because it builds up CO2, and you die as a result. So anything that burns natural gas or whatever, LPG, and you have a little burner, but you do that during the day, not at night time, because you've got to have the light, the CO2, the water, and then the plants just grow like you don't believe. In commercial nurseries where they really want plants to grow quickly, they have actual CO2 generators, which are pumping out CO2 during the day, not at night time.
And if you had just a wee flame, is it just a wee flame or is it a big burner? What would you need in a typical home glasshouse? Just a wee flame would be enough, like a candle-sized flame.
Sorry, say that again.
How big a flame do you need to create enough CO2 in your glasshouse?
Well, you've got the house closed down, so the CO2 is not going to get out. You have to kind of judge it, because if you close your house down and don't ventilate it, then the heat builds up. But there is a way around that too. If you have a slowly dripping hose in the glass house or a soak hose, just very lightly dribbling out, that moisture, of course, evaporates, and an evaporation cools the house. So you can cool your house down. We used to do it like concrete floors, water them down, and it would bring the temperature of the house down, because of the same principle as your refrigerator.
Hey, so guys, I'm going to jump in. We're going to do some questions from the chat. Everyone can see it's going super fast, and there's loads of questions coming in. We can't get to everything, but I've got a few flagged here. So, Wally, any comments about the use of electroculture using long poles in the ground, which is wrapped with copper wire that penetrate into the soil? And is that supposed to assist in production of healthy soil? I've been using it for a couple of years, and I'm pretty sure I'm getting some positive results. Do you have any comments on that?
Using coffee grounds?
No, poles in the ground that are covered with copper wire. So.
Oh, yeah. That's a new thing.
Yeah.
I haven't played with it myself, but I've read a bit about it. So you get a copper wire and you curl it. You have a length top and bottom. Put it into the soil. Now, what happens is it changes the soil to make it more moist. If you're using iron or steel, it actually dries it out. And it also brings down ions, positive ions, into the soil, and plants grow better. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Someone else just noted, Wally, to remind us all about why we must filter our water for our garden. Take the chlorine out.
Thank you, baby.
Yeah, well, chlorine in our water supply, they put there so that we, when we drink it, don't get a tummy bug, have diarrhea, whatever, right? So it's there to kill microbes or bacteria. In the soil, we have microbes, and those microbes are beneficial to the plants. They break down organic matter, etc., etc. They work along with other soil life, like the worms, etc. So if you're using chlorinated water to water your garden, you're going to kill the things that make your garden soil really good. I can give you an example. If you have a nice wet spring and everything comes away in the garden, it looks all healthy, everything's growing really nicely, and then when it starts to dry out and you get the hose out and start watering, everything goes backwards. You black spot, rust, and so forth. The plants look miserable. They're not growing happily like they were before. And then you get a week of rain and everything comes back to life. So chlorine in the water, the worms go, you don't have them, and they've been very beneficial in the soil. And the microbes get killed off, and they have to build their population again when they have a chance to do so. So get rid of the chlorine, and you will have a far superior garden totally. And also, the chlorine's not good for you. Your kidneys have to filter the stuff out, and it's not good to drink chlorinated water, that's for sure.
Someone's just come in, Wally, about their beefsteak tomato plants. Gave me a lovely tomato, then curled up its toes and the leaves turned brown. And it's got some green tomatoes on it, but they're staying green.
Right. The reason it died is a question. One of the problems that is through a lot of the country is an insect pest that came in from Australia about 6, 8, 10 years ago, called the psyllid, tomato psyllid, potato psyllid, right? And when they get into your garden, into your tomatoes, potatoes, tamarillos, and their populations build up during the time when the temperature is in the mid-range, if it's cool times, they don't breed very well. If it gets too hot, they don't breed very well. But in that mid-range, the mid-20s, they breed so quickly that you can have populations of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, literally. Now, the problem is the nymphs, which is the young juveniles, when they feed on your tomato plant, they inject a toxin in. On potatoes, it's quite noticeable, because if it happens in the early stage of your potatoes, your tubers underneath it will only get to about the size of a marble, right? And they'll be reshooting. If the psyllids attack later in the piece and the potatoes have got to a good size, when you cut them open, they've got dark rings inside the potato and basically are unedible. It's a problem too, which I've struck with potatoes, is that people will harvest the first plant or two. Potatoes are good size, they're clean. They leave the rest of the crop in the ground, and then 2 weeks later they go and dig another one and they're gone. It's ruined. So a tip for people, if your potatoes are ready to harvest, you don't have to harvest the whole crop, but you do have to cut the tops off, cover the stubble, and then they're safe in the ground from the psyllid. If you don't do that, you can lose the whole crop that you haven't harvested.
Good tip. Good tip. Wally, here's a question that I think I can answer. This was a written one in. Where can I buy banana plants in Marlborough, Blenheim, where we live? From Dominique. Do you know the answer to that, Wally?
Yeah, where I got my banana plants from, they've got a fantastic range, and I wrote it down somewhere.
It's, Land of the Lotus?
Yeah, the Land of the Lotus.
I got some from there, and I'm growing them in Otago, and they're looking wonderful. I got a banana plant and two pineapple plants.
Right. Now, here's an important thing.
Yes.
Last winter, I forgot to use Vapor Guard on my banana plant, and the whole thing got killed, literally, right? But out from the bottom later on came all the new suckers. So I didn't lose the plant completely. So with your banana plant, as it starts to go into winter and frost start to come, you're going to have to spray the plants with Vapor Guard to protect them against the frost.
Vapor Guard, there we go.
I've got one, Rodney. I'm going to jump in because this came in earlier and I want to get to it. I've got this. Somebody says, ancient wisdom says, I have weed mat and bark under fruit trees. In today's newsletter, Wally mentioned putting neem under drip line of trees. Can I use something else as a spray with apple cider vinegar since I can't reach soil through the weed mat and bar? Does that make sense?
Actually, the apple cider vinegar was a chap told me about this some time ago, and I wrote an article. The thing is, into 5 litres of water, you put 250 mils of apple cider vinegar, right? It could be any type of apple cider vinegar, brand, etc. And you spray that over your fruit trees in particular, but you can use it elsewhere in your garden, and it makes a world of difference. It's a lovely homemade sort of way of doing things. It's like using baking soda. There's a trick with baking soda, you know, that you can use for the hydrating the leaves of oxalis. If you make up a solution of baking soda, around about a tablespoon to a litre of water, spray your oxalis leaves, and they will all shrivel up. It won't kill the plant, but it'll kill the foliage. And also, if you to use the same thing on, say, your roses, it will stop black spots happening. So there's some things from the home. And one of the ones is dishwashing liquid. And this is a problem people have right at the moment, particularly with container plants. They go to water them. The water goes down to the saucer, right? And the plant doesn't really get a drink. Now, what you do is you simply put some warm water into your watering can and a good squirt of dishwashing liquid, lather it up and water that into the container mix, the potting mix, and that breaks the surface tension and allows the water to go down. And then on the lawn, you might get a brown patch. The grass around it's nice and green, but in the middle, it's brown. People think it's grass grub damage. It's not. It's what we call dry spot. And it's because the water won't go down in that spot. It goes to the sides. The grass is green. And so watering can, warm water, soapy from the dishwashing liquid, pour that on, and away it goes, lets the water go down, grass comes back green again.
How wonderful. What's wonderful here, Wally, is people in the chat are answering questions for people that are asking them as well. What a great community we have. We truly are blessed. Here's a question. Raspberries, do you have any tips on growing raspberries, and do you have any favourites, varieties?
No, I don't. I had to even look that one up, in actual fact. It depends, too, in New Zealand, where you are as to what variety of raspberry plants will do better. It's like grapes or anything. Some will tolerate conditions on the South Island down to Invercargill better than they would, and other ones are far better to grow up in Auckland or up north. So the type that you grow, the key to it with raspberries, of course, is to make sure they're free draining, but they do like their water. So you've got to give them drinks, but they don't like wet feet. And a nice sunny position, and then you have a fight against whether you get them or the birds get them when they're ripe.
I have a wonderful raspberry story because they're my favourite fruit, Wally. I put on my big boy trousers and drove the family into Skipper's Junction, which is a beautiful trip, way into, you know, the backcountry here in Otago, where they dug for gold. There were acres of raspberries.
Right.
Acres. And planted there in the 1860s and 70s. Can you believe it? And we got some canes, and a couple of them are growing. So I'm very excited because these are original raspberries.
Yeah, that they would be excellent.
And some of them, they had red ones, but they're also white raspberries. I'd never seen white raspberries before.
Yeah, right. Yep, yeah, there is too. Actually, one of the questions I saw too was that somebody said they had a yucca tree which had died or they cut down. And they wanted to know how to stop it sprouting again, right? Now, there's two ways. Really, the best way is probably using a chemical from Yates called Woody Weed Killer, in which you freshly scoured stump or you paint that on. But there's another way too for people that don't want to use that, and that's sump oil. Remember the old days when we used to change the oil in our cars?
Yep.
And we used to put it down the paddocks to make a line for the playing fields for the football. Sump oil. Yep. It cools. And it keeps killing for a long time. And once again, you could pour that onto your stump or drill some holes, pour it in, and the oil will go down and kill the stump.
Because they don't like you putting that in your red bin, so you always got to take it into the recycling centre. In fact, I've done all my little engines, and I've got to about 3 litres of sump oil, so I'll use it for that. Thank you, Wally. What about ladybugs?
Yeah, now a lady was talking about killing ladybugs. Now, there's ladybirds and ladybugs. Mm. Now, one is red with black spots, and that one eats other insects, aphids and things like that. It's very beneficial. But there's one that is yellow or orangey colour with black spots. They eat plants, right? So the one that eats the plants, you want to zap, and the one that eats other insects, you want to protect and look after. Pyrethrum, we have what we call Wally's Super Pyrethrum. And I've got a lot of gardeners at the moment complaining about leaf hoppers, shield beetles, stink bug beetles, and white fly and so forth. They're everywhere, can't get on top of them, but you can. And also with the butterflies and the caterpillars, right, on the brassicas, cabbages. You take the Super Pyrethrum, which is used at only 1 mL to 2 litres of water. So really, that's like a drop into 2 litres of water. And that's full strength. It's incredibly powerful. What you do is you go out just on dusk. It's no good doing it early in the day because pyrethrum is degraded by sunlight very quickly. So you go out just on dusk and you spray your cabbages, you spray your tomatoes that got white fly on them, move the plants, spray under and over and so forth. You spray the passion fruit vine with the passion vine hoppers, where the stink bugs are. And most of these insects are relatively settled at that time of night. And some of them are emerging because it's safer because the birds are going to go to sleep. And you spray them directly with the pyrethrum. What you don't use in the sprayer, put into a dark cabinet, out of light, and it will keep till next time you want to go and use it again. But that is the best way of getting some of these populations under control at this time of the year. And if you do your cabbages every 2 or 3 days, you'll have no caterpillar damage.
I've got a question from Darlene. She says, do you recommend your bird scare tape to deter a pukeko, a new pest in her garden, a pukeko?
Sorry, say that again.
Do you recommend your bird scare tape?
Oh,
how do you deter a pukeko?
Yep. Okay. It's a temporary fix because the flashing of it distracts the birds and it gives them a scare and leaves them alone. We have a new one called a bird gel. Now, bird gel is a product that comes from overseas and it's used on buildings where you've got a 2-story, 10-story building, you've got ledges, and you've got the pigeons and so forth on the ledges fouling. So they put these containers along the ledge, and to the birds, it looks like they're on fire, right? That's how it appears to them. And the smell of them is kind of like bubblegum smell, and they don't like the smell. I got hold of these and tried them out recently, and I put them on the website for people to have a go. And I found by taking the gel and putting it on the branch next to where some fruit is, started to be attacked by birds, it kept the birds away. It lasted for a period of about 2 weeks or so, and then I started to notice damage again. So obviously it's only a small amount you put in and it deteriorates with sunlight. But during the period of time while your fruit is ripening, which is over a period of about a month, you just need to apply it probably a couple of times and then you get to pick the fruit before the birds get to eat them.
Wow.
Bird
That's
gel.
Very cool. Here's a tough, I'm going to test you out. Libby Horton wants to know how long you've been gardening, Wally. You go right back to Eden days, don't you?
My first wheelbarrow and little spade was at the age of 2. And I was gardening from that age onwards. My mother was a keen gardener. We lived in my grandparents' place and in Elizabeth Street in Palmerston North. And it was a big section, fruit trees, chickens, and gardens. We grew all our own veggies, you know, cabbages, silver beet, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, I grew up hating silver beet.
I still
horrible
do.
Stuff.
I feed it to, I grow it to feed to my hens. They love it.
Oh,
Hey,
hens do, yeah.
What year were you 2 years old?
That's 1947.
So that's how long you've been gardening, Wally. Here's a, I'm going to show it through a curly one at you from Rachel. My cucumber plant has grey marks all over the leaves. Is there anything I could spray on them to get rid of it? Grey marks all over the cucumber leaves.
Grey marks. You mean probably powdery mildew? It sounds like that. Okay, our neem tree oil, our super neem tree oil, is ideal for powdery mildew. You spray that over the foliage, once again, late in the day, at dusk, and the leaves go back to green straight away. I think it's the oil and so forth takes care of the actual powdery mildew. And if it's a grey mould, probably the same thing would apply. Try the neem tree oil.
There you go. Wally, I've got a question for you here. What are good companion plants for planting around brassicas in the winter?
Yeah, I looked that up because companion planting, in my mind, is two aspects. One is that the companion plant will take the nutrients that the other plant doesn't want, right? And the other aspect is by having a companion plant there, it tends to deter insect pests. The perfect situation is, of course, if you've got one particular plant, say a cabbage, growing amongst a whole range of plants, then the white butterfly has a job finding it, right? But if you have a whole paddock full of cabbages, wow, white butterfly says, this is heaven, cabbage heaven. So it works that way. Companion planting is offsetting one aspect against another. And I did take some notes there somewhere. Companion planting for brassicas. And they said beans, garlic, and nasturtiums were the companion plants. I presume the garlic would help disguise the smell of the brassicas. And the nasturtium certainly would, because they've got a nice smell to them. Beans in the middle of winter, I don't think you're going to get very well with your beans. They're more of a summer crop. But the garlic. And now here's an interesting thing too. I am now having a go at planting garlic at this time of the year, right, to overcome the problems of garlic rust, which if you plant in the normal time, which is the middle of winter, shortest day, and then harvest the longest day, round about the November period, out comes rust and your crop's ruined, right? So if you were living in the Philippines, they plant garlic all year round. But then again, they have 12 hours of light every day of the year. So 12 hours dark, 12 hours light. Sun comes up 6 o'clock in the morning, goes down 6 o'clock at night. It's boom, boom, like that. And stuff just grows because of the 12 hours of light every day. So people could try. I mean, say you just take a couple of cloves of garlic, stick them in the ground somewhere or in a container, and away you go. You've got nothing to lose.
Someone's just chatted here that their grandfather used to be the tomato man in Palmerston North. Did you know the tomato man? The tomato plant
man. Do you know the tomato man?
There was a Chinese gentleman.
Oh, you've told me that story, that on the glass house. Was he Chinese, Darlene? Well, she'll come back and tell us. Now, someone's got possums eating their apples and pears. What would you do?
Have you got what, sorry?
A possum eating apples and pears.
Oh, okay. One of the things that's interesting in the countryside with people with roses and so forth, where the possums come down at night time and have a nibble up, is neem tree oil that we have, Wally's super neem tree oil. It tastes bloody horrible. I know I tried to siphon some out of a drum one time and I got a mouthful. I never do it again. Yuck. Well, the key is this. You spray the foliage with neem tree oil, right, that's been attacked. The possum comes along, he smells it, he has a nibble and goes, yuck. And as long as the smell's there, he should leave it alone. It also applies with rabbits and hares, same principle, right? So you don't want to have to spray all the time. So once he's had a taste of it, you get neem tree granules and put that on the ground or hang little bags of it on the tree so the smell is present. So when the possum comes along, he associates the smell to the taste and leaves it alone. It's a nice, easy way to do it.
There you go.
Lanolin too, sheep's wool, is another one. They don't like that.
Guys, I'm going to jump in and move things along, but I want to remind everyone, we're obviously not going to get to every question, but we are going to save the chat. Ginger, who's in the background, is going to save the chat and make sure that in the next Wally webinar, we can answer more of those questions in an upcoming interview. Also, I have a little invitation for people. If you want to take a before photo of your garden or your plant that has a problem, and then you want to apply one of the tips you've gotten from Wally tonight, and then you can send us an after photo and we might even post it on socials. That would be pretty cool. It's exciting that he's sharing so many amazing tips tonight. I'm going to tell you about some upcoming webinars later on, but Rodney, I believe you have one last main topic for Wally to cover.
Well, I probably do. A new solution to an old problem, Wally.
Am I what? Sorry?
You've got a new solution to an old problem.
Oh, yeah. That was using these here. The containers to keep the white butterfly and you the did, cats and the birds.
You did the last of the first. Now, everyone that's got a question, because gardeners have got burning questions, here's what you do. Don't ring before 10 in the morning. Would that be fair, Wally?
Sorry, say that again.
Don't ring you before 10 o'clock in the morning.
Don't ring me at 10 o'clock.
Before 10 o'clock.
I'm normally in the office at 9 o'clock.
Oh, there you go.
Take calls then. But I'm still in my pyjamas because my office
that's the
is
thing.
At home.
I get you on the pyjama call. But you can give Wally a ring in the morning. He'd love to hear from you. You're going to be busy tomorrow, Wally. And you can ring him personally, 0800-466-464. Did I get it right?
That's right. Yep, 100%.
0800-466-464. And you can get Wally directly yourself.
Yeah.
And so, but how much fun is it to have the chat going and have everyone coming in with their questions? It's wonderful.
It is.
Think also seeing your guys' faces. I mean, I've listened to your interviews. I've listened to the show before, but to see your guys' faces. Before we move on, I did want to ask, because it came up early on, and personally, I want to know, a lot of our listeners were concerned about GE and the GE bill. Do you have any thoughts or any comments on that, either Wally or Rodney?
Yes, I'm dead against it, totally. I've read stories like my favorite one, was this farmer over in America, wintertime, and he was putting out ears of corn for the squirrels to feed on, who are hungry, of course. He did that for several weeks, and then one day he put out a GE cob of corn, and he watched. The squirrels came down, they looked at it, they sniffed it, and they left it. And following day, it's still there. They come back. And when they got to the point where they were so hungry, they would only just nibble a little bit at the ends. They wouldn't eat it properly. So he felt so sorry for them once he got learnt that he took good corn, put that down, and we're into this again. Animals have got more bloody brains than we have. That's for sure. Dogs will not drink chlorinated water unless they have to, because they know it's poison. Everything in the animal world has got more sense than humans. And what do? GE food, etc. And the trouble is it's already here. Canola oil, soya oil, coming from overseas, GE. cotton. Your cotton that you buy in products for feminine products, full of glyphosate, proven. And one of the reasons for cervix cancer is because Tampax or products like that. Not good, not good. And even in New Zealand, in fact, New Zealand Food Safety put a stop to it. Farmers growing wheat used to spray the crop with Roundup prior to harvest because it dries it out and it makes the collecting of the wheat seed much easier. But the problem was, of course, that wheat seed was full of Roundup and it was going and making flour. And the flour, of course, is going into our bread. So we're getting doses of Roundup inadvertently without realizing it. But that's been stopped, as far as I'm aware.
It's disgusting.
It is.
We've got to get back to nature. We've got to rely on nature. We can't trust our politicians. We can't trust these big companies. And the idea they're ramming this bill through is against nature and against God, and it's against every way we want to live, because we want to live healthily. And there's no way that technology can replace nature. No way whatsoever.
And the food that you grow personally yourself in your own backyard, either in containers or in the open ground, and using natural products, animal manures, et cetera, are going to be super healthy. But the stuff you buy, commercially grown, are full of sprays,
There you go.
lots of sprays.
I think we're clear on that, Nat.
I think so. And we've got a few things in the chat popping in. You can go to www.genetechgamble.co.nz to spread the word about that. And thank you for chiming in on that. It's very vital. I mean, Wally has so much wisdom on the plants and the gardening, but also how important it is that we keep things natural here. And also, Greg, thank you for the link to rebuildfree.com for more ideas on living free. Rodney, anything else from you before I'm going to let people know what other exciting webinars are coming up that you're doing in March? But anything else for Wally that you want to ask him before we go?
No, not at all, other than to say we're very blessed to have Wally. Everyone loves you, Wally. And
Thank
they
you.
say in the chat group that obviously gardening is great for your health because you look so youthful and enthusiastic. And everyone is amazed by your knowledge, Wally. And we're blessed. We're blessed to have you on our webinar. And we've had just a wonderful group tonight chatting away there, solving each other's problems. And watching the chat just reminds me how lucky we are, how fortunate we are to have such a wonderful community.
Yeah, and I just love helping people getting healthy and having great gardens.
You go. Over to you, Nat.
Amazing. Well, I'm going to invite people to pop one word in the chat about how gardening makes them feel. I think you said earlier, you could be stressed, but you go out into the garden, you start watering your garden, and it's just, you feel calm. So if people want to, as I'm telling you about the webinars, pop one word, how does gardening make you feel? That'll be interesting. And here are the upcoming webinars. So we've got coming up in March, Dr. Sarah Ferrant, who you've interviewed before multiple times. I've interviewed her as well. She's going to be talking to you, Rodney, about health outside the system. That's on Sunday, the 16th of March at 8 p.m. So that'll come around real quick, right? Time is going so fast. You've also got Christine Smith on Survive and Thrive in Homeschooling. I met Christine at the fluoride event. The fluoride-free event. So that was pretty cool. Sunday, the 30th of March at 8 p.m. So that's at the end of the month. And then there's also the upcoming biometrics webinar with Paul Brennan and Stephen Sykes. That one is Monday, the 10th of March at 8 p.m. So everyone, just basically keep an eye on your inbox if you want to learn more about those upcoming webinars, the gardening, I mean, sorry, Sarah Ferrant and Christine, and then also the biometrics ones as well. Let's see those words coming in. How do you feel about gardening? Thank you so much, Wally. You are just brilliant. If we can get
Pleasure.
Wally's website, please, popped in the chat again so it's easy for people to find. We will get any questions we didn't answer, we'll get to in the next one. Rodney, we love you. Thank you for
Oh,
everything
thank
you
you, Nat.
do. Everyone knows now you can go to the app, you can click on Rodney's face, you can go and see his recent interviews, and he's got amazing guests lined up. I've got some more amazing guests lined up. In fact, Bruce Lipton, who I interviewed a few weeks back, has a few events coming up in Auckland. So maybe I'll see some of you there in real time. And I'm coming to Christchurch next week. So if you're in there, if you're down in Christchurch, let me know. I might see you there as well. Awesome. Thank you everyone for joining us.
Bye
for the
bye,
webinar
everyone.
Series.
Bye-bye, Wally.
Spread the word. The replay will be available. And thanks, everyone, for listening to RCR.